pause. Hey, welcome to Real Liberty Media. I'm starting all over here. Again, these buttons, I didn't push the record button. So I'm going to start again. Here we go. I'm your host, Vincent Easley, RealLibertyMedia.com. This is another edition of American Dissonance. And I'm bringing to bear protest and contrast the red, white, and you. So for the recording, let's do this one again. This great evil, where does it come from? I'm going to go back to the quote. This is from James Jones in The Thin Red Line, and bringing these to bear, red and white and contrast in black and white. This great evil, where does it come from? How did it steal into the world? What seed, what root did it grow from? Who's doing this? Who's killing us? Robbing us of life and light, mocking us with the sight of what we might have known. Does our ruin benefit the earth? Does it help the grass to grow, the sun to shine? Is this darkness in you too? Have you passed through the night? So I posted that from a memory some years back and tacked it in together with another one from 6 years ago. Earth Day, that was yesterday. But it has more meaning for many, I think. It's more than saving the whales and more than the climate change debate. It's a resistance we show in the fight we endure against those and all that which is self-evident in the subduction and utter destruction of the world and all upon it. We live in a point in history for the first time that we are able to converse, so to speak, face-to-face around the world now. We're finding out that we're pretty much the same, and the desires of liberty and life brings to focus a common ground that we may rally around. And again, let me read to this. Kim, thanks. A friend from school way back when, she said she remembers as a child, we picked up trash on Earth Day, and it's turned into something more elaborate now. Neil Wampler, my friend from Vegas at the Bundy trial, and who was at the Oregon standoff. This contrast, this black and white, I'm going to have to go back over into the Twitter here for reference here. And Tired Indian, I'm going to be quoting his thread. And thanks, I asked him if it'd be all right. And he says, awesome, and he'll go listen to it. If you're not here live now, it will be archived and up. Be working on that this weekend. It's not going to post today. But anyways, I asked him about this because it tied into, and I've got to scroll a long ways to get down to it. It tied into this thread here and the mainstream media, right? The clap, as we call it here at Real Liberty Media. It was a piece from Jacqueline Keeler. And Tired Indian, he says, has created a list where she has attacked tribal citizens, descendants from the Pocumpkee and Monacan and Petey nations by saying they aren't native enough, despite being claimed and enrolled in their communities. So tying back into the thread I'm coming to, this person, Zim, says they look like a bunch of inbred hicks. I was talking about the Bundy family. And here it is. So Standoff is a book from Jacqueline Keeler. The review says a thoughtful book compares the 2016 events at Standing Rock with a white standoff the same year in Oregon. And this review is from Lorraine Berry. Let's see if I can pull that out of here. From Tory House. Lorraine Berry, I'm sorry, comes from the Star Tribune. And Tory House Press published this book, Standoff, from Jacqueline Keeler. Hey, Aussie Skateboard, our friend from UCY.TV, he says, what does that have to do with being white? Is there no ends to this mind game? Well, I say maybe the short answer is that maybe they just want to be in charge of the way the story ends. All right. All right. So back again here to scroll down a little bit here. So Jacqueline Keeler, she is editor-in-chief of Poland Nation magazine, editor of Edge of Morning, Native Voices Speak for Bears Ears, creator of Not Your Mascot. I got to back up some more here. I probably should go on my phone for this, but I might be able to get it from here. All right. So this is it. I say here to this article that came from hold on, let me get to it. Am I mistaken in recognizing Ammon as the only Bundy family member in this photo from the AP? The Bundy family at Malheur National Wildlife Refuge near Burns, Oregon in 2016. And here it is. It's a review, the non it's a stand up. Let me get to it. Let me open it up. And then we're going to come tie this around and around. All right. So, review of a standoff by Jacqueline Keeler, nonfiction. Jacqueline Keeler's thoughtful book compares 2016 events at Standing Rock with a white standoff the same year in Oregon. And here they have this picture. It shows Ammon Bundy in the middle, a couple of people behind him, you can't see their face, and then two people on each side of him. The one guy on the right, which would be stage left, I think he was from Oregon up there. I think I've seen his picture, but I couldn't ever remember where. Anyways, the optics here, should I read this? Let me look. Let's do it, because let's include this review. The optics in 2016 were startling. In that year, armed white men dressed in cowboy hats and range coats took over Oregon's Malheur National Wildlife Refuge with little opposition, while 1,200 miles east, unarmed members of the Great Sioux Nation protesting an oil pipeline at Standing Rock in North Dakota were bombarded with water moccasins and arrested en masse. It did. Kara Young and Mike Bluehair, we did some radio together. Mike was out there at the Standing Rock. Hal Anthony and I both spoke extensively about this, and I concluded very early on that they would not prevail, and their best hope was to look into how the contracts are made and the pipelines. I mean, once they're in the ground, they're basically no responsibility for any accidents, and they should have just made it so overwhelmingly safe in that pipeline and restrictions and all that. Anyways, that's a longer story, and we'd have to go back some years there to Hal Anthony and some of the stuff that I spoke about, and also Kira Young and Mike Blue here to add the on-the-ground report. Anyways, a sad state of affairs, and that's another big contrast in our economy and producing this the death from the ground in oil as opposed to renewable. But again, a longer topic. So I'll continue. The optics in 2016 were startling. In that year, white. Here we go back to that. Let me skip ahead. Yeah. To the 1,200 miles away in the Sioux Nation in North Dakota. They were attacked pretty badly. We'll bounce back and forth as I go along here. And while cable and network news extensively covered the events at Malheur, the efforts to protect the groundwater at Standing Rock received sporadic national coverage. In standoff, Jacqueline Keeler, a member of both the Diné and Akitanahuan Dakota Nations, sorry about the mispronunciation, writes that the two incidents offered a contrast not only in the ways that race continues to play a role in protest and official response to said protests, but also in demonstrating how culture and history have shaped white and indigenous relationships with American land. Now, I will be clear that she does bring to bear some good points. What is being called systematic racism, I guess. Keeler sees stories as a primary way of establishing one's attitude towards land and its purpose. She agrees that the 1493 Doctrine of Discovery, established in a papal bull, declared undiscovered lands could be claimed by their European discoverers. That claim could be buttressed by the justification that the original Aboriginal peoples who lived there did not use the land in optimal ways. I'll interrupt there and touch that to Bundy and prior use or first use, where they claim once a cow ate a blade of grass or drank from a stream, then they appropriated priori, I think is the word I'm looking for there, and then was able to claim a title for use of that. There's more to that. Let me come back for my interruption here. So, European desires to extract value from the land via mining, agriculture, or the taking of timber were better uses for land rather than just allowing it to remain in its natural state. I'll interrupt there as well, and going back to the hashtag log it, graze it, or watch it burn, and interject into, well, by supposed science, then we look at some certain laws that everything tends towards a matter of decay and disarray. Especially after something's been messed up, if you don't lend a hand in there for correction, then it's just going to get worse. So what we have out west is these wildfires and people trying to say we should do it this way or that way. But when man lends a hand, in the case of Bundy and cattle, brings life to the desert, the cattle, by their grazing, they reduce fire hazards, allowing fresh growth also for other animals, and also the water that wouldn't otherwise be there is there. So is there a place for a man and on the land? Well, with the extreme environmental movements, we'll see that they would say no, and would to lock everybody out. Continuing, she argues that the Bundy family's claim that grazing their cattle on Bureau of Land Management land was a better use for the land than having it sit empty, and is a part of this inherited historic approach. The Bundy's claim to the land and the events leading up to the armed storming of a federal building so far from the truth again. Let me interrupt this here to say there was, she says armed storming of a federal building. All right, it was a little outbuilding out on, how far? 30 odd miles, I guess, from Burns, next to the Hammonds. They run cattle there, and that's what brought the Bundys and other folks to rally out there because of this imposed federal sentence of prison, sending the Hammonds back to prison for setting some fires there, burned 120-something acres in a backfire. And she calls it Bureau of Land Management land, but that's not really the way that works. So, again, back to Hal Anthony and Behind the Woodshed and describing egress, ingress, who owns portions of land. So in public lands, right, versus public domain. So we get lost a lot in definitions. So on these public lands out here, this public domain, there's certain things that are owned by certain people, and the government there was to manage it. Well, there's grazing rights, there's mining rights, there's water rights, there's rights for the hunter and the fisherman and the recreational. Does there need to be protection in certain areas? Absolutely. And But the majority of that desert out there is the same old, the hundreds and hundreds of miles. And the cattle out there benefit it, and they benefit the tortoise, which was the main reason for removing ranchers out there off the land, but more nefarious. So we have people that suppose are doing right. They lend their hand in where they may. Well, let's continue. That storming of a federal building. There was nobody even there. People were armed, sure. But she says it further complicated by the specious legal reasoning that jurisdiction over land rests with local governments rather than the federal government. Now, this woman speaking for this federal government and oversight and control that being overreaching, especially against the indigenous of this nation. Yeah, I find it in contrast how she would condemn and condone at the same time. So even as the Bundy cohort claimed individual rights enunciated in the U.S. Constitution. For members of the nine tribes of the Great Sioux Nation, their relationship to the land is based in stories from an oral tradition with which most Americans are not conversant. While classroom civic classes acquaint Americans with the philosophy and events that informed the writing of the Constitution, they do not teach the stories that tie the Sioux to their Dakota and Lakota lands. Keeler draws on her heritage to illustrate the ways in which oral traditions establish these connections and infuse beliefs of belongings to the land. She also argues that American perceptions that treaties were terms of surrender rather than negotiations between sovereign nations caused many Americans to see the Indians as the party that always needs to concede in any conflict. Keeler makes a compelling case that the government's response to the two incidents go beyond the simple optics of white cowboys being treated differently than Indians. The racial aspect is undeniable, but Keeler's education, what? I'm sorry, that's not, I've not read this word, elucidation, I'll have to look that up, sorry about that, elucidation, of how the domination of the written word over oral storytelling contributes to the unequal application of justice adds a fascinating context. Hold on just a minute. I gotta look up this word. Elucidation. Elucidation. That's in would be bringing light to. Must be something like that. But I'm still gonna look at elucidation. Let's see here. Okay, ideas may occur in abstract forms, but their elucidation happens only through language. I see. Let's go ahead and open FOIC. I'll go to Marion. That was the second online Marion Dictionary. To make lucid, so I was not too far off. To make lucid, especially by explanation or analysis, to give a clarifying explanation. All right, thank you. Now, where was I at? Over here. Not there, da 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 da. Here. Nope. I've lost my play. Here it is. The review. Okay, I'm back. Continuing then from Lorraine Berry. I was disappointed that Keeler did not provide bibliography or notes, but I also found it illustrative of the difficulties of documenting the oral transmission of culture. I try to always cite sources. I quoted when I opened there that quote about the evils on the earth. I'd felt in my original citation that to quote who it was from there, the thin red line. So I looked that up to find that. Lorraine Berry is a book critic in Oregon. Standoff by Jacqueline Keeler, publisher Torrey House Press, 236 pages for $19.95. Now, again, I ask, who's responsible? Now, let me go over here to Tired End. Hold on, wait. Actually, I need to... let me go to Tired End. I'm going to follow this thread out here. And this is in contrast. This the red, white, and you. He's Tired Indian is an advocate for East Coast tribal visibility. So I'll read this thread here. It's a waste. Okay, I'm asking my followers and friends on Native Twitter to retweet this thread and share with people you know. If you call yourself an ally to East Coast tribal nations, now's the time to stand up. Jacqueline Keeler has added a PD tribal member to her pretendian list. Show thread. Will this give it to me here? I think so. If anybody had, I'll include it in the show notes, but I was going to bring it over to chat real quick. And if you're over here, if you made it over, I've not kept track of the chat here. If you're listening the entirety, and then appreciate this thread. Here's a dropping off in chat, and I'm going to go over to the other channel here just so y'all can find it here. And here we go. Back over. Okay. This is a good long thread, and we'll read through it. Tired End, it says, I first came across this 2 months ago, and I didn't know how to react. I was hurt, angry, and depressed, but also not shocked, considering how rampant anti-East Coast Native behavior runs in Indian country. I knew that if I spoke up, I'd be attacked, but I did not care anymore. I think it's the last one. I'll save it till I get to it then, because I got response for here that ties into that last story, but it runs together, right? All right. The history of PD people is complicated, but it is a story of resilience and resilience in a time of invisibility, colonialism, and overall hardship. Jacqueline Keeler is blatantly disrespecting the PD ancestors who attended segregated schools, were removed, and even genocided. The PDs and other South Carolina tribes, like the Wakama, are on track to becoming federally recognized in the not-so-distant future. It is sad and unfortunate that people like Jacqueline Keeler want to blanket all non-federally recognized tribes as fake. There are currently three recognized bands of PD in the state of South Carolina. The band of PDs that I come from are the ones who were removed from the Coachman Reservation. In the next few tweets, I will describe the different bands and the current situation. After being displaced due to colonialism in the upstate, a large group PD people petitioned the colony in 1737 for land to live on. This group of PD people, along with the Natchez refugees who arrived in South Carolina, were placed on a 100-acre plot of land called the Coachman Res. The Coachman Reservation is located on Edisto River in Dorchester County and was promised to the PD and the displaced Natchez people for 1,000 years. Of course, that promise was eventually broken. In 1744, the PD and Natchez people had invited the Catawbas to visit the new res and wanted to renew their friendship with them. One evening, everyone except the Natchez folks partook in the consumption of spirits and went to bed. The Natchez, for unknown reasons, attacked and murdered most of the Catawba delegation. This event is known as the Murder of the Four-Hole Swamp. Consequently, the Pedi entered into conflict with the Catawba and the Chera during this time period until the Revolutionary War. During the whole time period, there were three Pedi bands living in different parts of the South Carolina colony. One band in Marlborough County, one near the Black River, and one on the Coachman Res. While each band had its leaders, Chief Lewis Jones is recorded as being the king over all of them. When the Revolutionary War broke out, the 50 Pedi riflemen were put in into John Alston's Raccoon Company. After the war, the new state of South Carolina allotted land totaling up to 2,000 acres in the Beaver Creek, Bull Swamp, Goodland Swamp areas of Orangeburg and Lexington, South Carolina. Let me back up just a minute this year here. Where is it at? 1737. Okay. I'd have to backtrack some history there. It's interesting. Where my family comes from in East Tennessee over Sullivan County, real close to Carolinas there. But there had been some breaking off in the states and how that all came about. And Cherokee people there, of course, displaced also. Longer story. Where was I at? I'm scrolling back down. Okay. All right, we're at the, yes, after being allotted individual land plots in this area, the tribe remained somewhat united until the death of Chief Jones. He kept the bands together. After his passing, Pedi people became surrounded by Swiss-German immigrants. While the three Pedi bands officially separated from each other due to lack of unified leadership, after Chief Jones' death, the Pedi people retained a strong sense of identity and remained close-knit even to this day. Our ancestors constructed Rocky Swamp Indian Methodist Church in 1831. The church kept our Pedi people together and still does to this day. There's a lot of history on that grounds. Also to this day, tribal members still go to sweat on the property. Pedi people in both the upstate and low country were not allowed to attend white schools. Because of this, our ancestors attended the Four Pine Schools of Indians in Orangeburg, Leland Grove Indian School, and a Sardis Indian School. The Pedi tribes are recognized by the state of South Carolina and are currently seeking federal recognition. While there has been some infighting and political divisions, unity does not seem far off for the Pedi people. When I see some people like Jacqueline Keeler attack a Pedi tribal member, I see her attacking the ancestors who suffered genocide, removal, segregation, and so forth. I see this as an attack on resilient people. This all being said, I demand Jacqueline Keeler apologize for her bigotry and ignorance, and I ask that Native Twitter will hold her accountable for this hatred. Jacqueline has no right to attack a people whom she has absolutely no knowledge. Let's see, I hope I can find where I'll have to go back to my page and go to my tweets and responses, I think. So I didn't hear, I'm going to share this thread on air if it's okay with you, please. And awesome, he says, I'll go listen to it. There, let's see, I need to go back and pick up a little bit more, because what he says, let me say it again. This all being said, I demand Jacqueline Keeler apologize for her bigotry and ignorance. And I'll have to go over here to get my response for that, because I don't think that's going to happen at all. And I'll tell you why. Because I'll go back to where we started, as I usually do in this great evil. Come here to me. Okay, I think I about found it. Found it here. Slow. All right. If I can get to it from here. I think so. Yes, no, maybe. Yes, I did. Yay, Twitter. Did I or not? I say, well, at least an excuse is something. I usually get no response at all. Well, here it is. This must be it. This, yes. Yes, I found it. Good, thank you. I would expect excuses and not an apology or retraction. And I say that again, and I say this again. Well, at least an excuse is something. I usually get no response from mainstream media. So they did respond here. Jacqueline Keeler and Lorraine Berry both responded. My question is, am I mistaken, or is Ammon the only guy there? Jacqueline Keeler says, Bundy family members and supporters with a question mark. And Lorraine Berry, I think she posted that one before Jacqueline did, which she said, Lorraine Berry says, I would imagine that the editor who chose the photo for the article meant Bundy family, in the same vein that folks refer to families of believers who follow a person. You're putting a lot into that, because, like I was telling you about that photo, I have no idea who those guys are. I think I recognize one guy as being from Oregon up there, but they're people in a photo op. So for the AP just to pull a stock photo, what is it, AP bucket? I have experience with the media in Vegas. I got a chance to get some insight, at least. And the AP, you'll see a lot of their stories that have no author, first of all. So I don't even think they even get the photographer is. Let's see. Yeah, just from the Associated Press. That's all they say. What's his name? Colin. Forgetting his first name, pretty famous photographer. I spent the day riding around with him and Clive and Bundy in 2018 after the trial. I still have video, and I'm conflicted on sharing it. I'd have to go more into that. But my thing is here, this clap, this corporate lame-ass propaganda that we get in mainstream media, that's what it is. It's crap and clap. Where was that? So, Indians, Native Americans, Aboriginal, First Nations, Phyllis Sinclair. Wow, I should have pulled her up. I think I might. She's up in Canada. You know, there's a real issue going on here. But this white standoff versus Standing Rock, because there was a lot of white folks at Standing Rock. The Bundys came out in support of the Standing Rock situation and their plight, their right to protest. So contrasting this between who's an Indian or who ain't an Indian. I was born in Oklahoma from second grade on up for a good long while in life. My best friend, his mama was Creek and his daddy was white, but he identified. That's stupid. He was an Indian. Al, I run with him. We went to powwows. I remember one time, this guy, I said, I was Cherokee. All of you white boys from Oklahoma are Cherokee. It's funny. But a lot of people say that. And there's this, my great-great-grandmother was a Cherokee princess. That's kind of a joke for Oklahoma. Well, my brother had DNA. I guess that there's not enough. I always thought it was like 3/32nds maybe of Cherokee blood. And I had some supposition into that. Back to East Tennessee, you go back and you look at the folks there and you can see the Cherokee bloodline in white people there. But others have found their ancestry and claim that heritage. How dark do you have to be? You go back and look. The problem in with the Sioux Nation and other Indian tribes, nations out to the Midwest and the Pacific Northwest, where they were taken and shipped off to schools, genocided. I don't have anything to cite for this, but they would breed white into Indians, right? And then they'd look less Indian. So the people that looked more white were more favored, and they weren't as apt to be killed. But there's, you know, been a lot of genocide. Genocide of white people, too, and going to the Bundys in their religious faith. Can I get back over here where I want to be and find this? Because it's going to be way on down. In response, and again, thanks for the response in that. I haven't finished her book here, and I got to find it. It's taking a while to scroll down here, I believe. But again, thanks again for response. But it is a book about the Bundys, American Zion. And I'm going to have to keep going so I can pull it up. And I want to play a couple of videos, too, in contrast. One of for the Bundys, and one, Leonard Peltier. It's a story that needs to be told, one that I've been meaning to tell here in American Dissonance. I'm afraid it's going to take me a while to get down to all this. I could even probably interrupt with that, but I kind of don't. I kind of do, if I can find it. I got a lot of scrolling here. Hey, there's Redneck Dentist Saturdays here at Real Liberty Media, 5 p.m. Eastern. Dave Brinsky, Skater Dude. Yeah, Showdown in Idaho. That was April the 16th. There's another standoff coming. You gotta wonder, these ideas of protest and what Ammon Bundy is, the whole thing. He's got warrant out for him. His trial's coming up middle of next month. I suspect they're probably just going to leave him to sit at home and see what happens when he shows up. They'll probably take him into custody there. He's not going to wear a mask. They were part of protest. What is your protest? And are you more rednecker than me? There's a mention about Louis Arthur. Screwy Louis. What an idiot. He's a dick and he's dangerous. This is long scrolling. Where are you? I think is what I'll do. No. I think I might be getting close. Yeah, I didn't spend any time this week at all preparing for today, but at the last minute, because I'm taking a little hiatus. I've got gardening going on, lots of work to do outside, dealing with my foot again. I think I got about healed up, went to the wound doctor yesterday, go back again next week, but it bled good, so they said that's lucky, and it's good, of course. Bleeding is, you know, means you're getting good circulation. So diabetes, so man, but I'm doing real good, getting good numbers, dealing with for past year or so. Grimner highlighted me. Here's a good interruption, and I should play that song, "Bird on a Buffalo." My dad used to sing a cowboy song. I roasted my bird on a buffalo turd, cooking on cow pies. Never feels hard to get her to singing that song. Let's go see what you said, Grimmer. Wow, there's 116 comments since I've been gone. Yeah, Grimmer says, show preparation is for wussies. Yeah. Well, I was busy doing other things and things, you know. Is that the one? Where was I at? Wait, I done lost myself. Here I am. I found myself, found my way back. I even got that in my notes somewhere back over behind me. Yeah, and I was talking about how I'd spent 40 days, 12 and 28 respectfully, camping out there on the Virgin River, and some duck hunters gave me a duck. Well, they were hunters and got a duck. And I cooked it over dung, cow pie, wrapped in orange peel. And I called the recipe Orange Cow Dunga Duck. Anybody check for it? We got over in the chat, we got it duck flies around through there. You can kill them or catch them. Be friends with them. Skyree says cooking on shit seems weird to me, but I don't know about that. Oh, I made a cool rocket stove. I got that on my YouTube channel. Cooking with tarts. Have I found it? Not quite yet, but there's a picture of me behind the Bundys, beside the militia, betwixt the sheriff, below the flag, between the speakers, before the people, standing in the gap. Standoff for Showdown, Ammon Bundy, it's the war in the West. That was stomp the earth, stomp the terraces, lucky he got away. Well, that makes me chuckle. It's forever. Where's it at? Oh, it's going to be before here because I talked about her in that broadcast. Oh, hey, here's another interruption. I tipped rlmradio.xyz using the Brave browser. Check it out at brave.com/tips. Tips with Brave. Pondergander at RLM Radio at Barman RLM. Pondergander. Yay, yay. Shut your face. That's what this one Emily Walton said about the mask wearer. Emily Walton said Ammon's purpose. Shut your face. I said, that's kind of been his purpose all along. Flying in the very face of that statement. Not being muzzled. That's what that means. There's tents. Where are you at? Come along. I think I'm getting closer. But then again, hell, I might have even passed it on by. Might just go look it up. Ba-bum-bum-bum. Tech cow. If it wouldn't matter. All right, kicking nobody's dog today. Where are you at? Where's that book? I'm just going to have to go read it, I think. Go get it. Because all that is done is done with an eye for something else. Simply put, to understand the deed, look for the motive. So where do we find this conflict and this contrast between red, white, and you? Well, or black. I mean, what color? It's off color. I'm gonna go get it. I'm just gonna do it because I'm not finding it here. So let me go get the author, and she did have some nice response there, and in contrast. But I didn't finish the book. I need to do that. Also, have another review to do. What is your name, girl? Oh, one woman said, you're not supposed to, I'm not fond of the word gal. What kind of words are you supposed to use? Mostly got offended I said colored, and I was just using it as a word for starting with C, because cops and colored. Anyways, this guy I used to work for, he called black folks colored, and I'd always ask him what color, and he'd fall for it every time. There we go. I'm sorry I couldn't remember your name. Betsy Gaines Quammen, American Zion, Cliven Bundy, God and Public Lands in the West. So I have that on, I bought the audio version. And kind of wish I'd have got the hard copy and seen if I'd had any, citing her sources and quotations. And I couldn't get signed into Amazon. Because I got an old cell number on there, and I don't know how to try to get in there and change it. Anyways, I gave up on that. So, where was I? I've almost gone through an hour, and that's pretty good, I guess, for not having been prepared for nothing. Where was I at? Not in that one. In this one. Let me run through some stuff, if I can make sense of it, because I didn't put it all in order. And then I think I do want to include at the end the videos just for posterity and the end conflict, this contrast of in protest. There is a high cost of living, but it's nothing compared to the cost of living with a lie. So these are some of the paraphrased plagiarisms that I'll probably not even cite. But this one I will, from 21 Riots, that car radio, peace will win, fear will lose. Reminds me of Lonnie Clark. Something you say on the run, them words you say, rolled out in stone. We could pose as partners. Most people ain't more than that anyways. One sec. All right, way out of order. And flipping pages in the interim interrupted. I did not put them in order. I was not going to do a radio show today, but just for some reason I couldn't help myself. Because we are born for times such as these, I don't feel like anything really to be just a little bit more uncomfortable. And we are. Lavoie Finicum said that we are born for times such as these. And it came to me, how must I stand? Not go? I got to. Well, I am a bit slow, but the call comes. Sometimes you gotta take the bull by the horns. That's not what I wrote. I'll be nice, but it's been a, and this one I played with a few times. A clock stopper. I'll call it. Well, a few of my favorite things. I know my grandpa. Yes, I know where I come from. That's all we need sometimes, right? Smoke a little bit of that tumbleweed. Pick out the seeds. To the left and right, well, there's law and land. And there's small farms and big towns and repetition. One-on-one. If it was meant to be, it will be. Again, plucking from a song. Yeah, it's kind of close enough anyways. Take a soft stand. There ain't no such thing as a soft stand, is there? You got to build your foundation on the rock. Nobody wants to be alone. So we got to find our way back. What, by dowsing rods, two sticks, a coon's tail? Hey, Rocky, watch me pull this rabbit out of a hat. Let's see. Grimner says he'd not recommend taking a bull by the horns. Won't turn out well. Beth, I'm sorry I'm not keeping up with track. Oh, the next lot of bacterial sickness from mass wearers. Yeah, you know there's a lot to it. And I'm going to say this at my wound care yesterday. When I go to the doctor, as a courtesy, I pull a mask over my face when they're right there, but when I'm standing around, I stand away from people in the waiting room. I don't have a mask over my face. When I walk up to them, I'm going to give them that courtesy. So yesterday, the helper in there for the doctor, she's preparing my foot. I pull my mask up when she comes to before me. She said, you know, I'm not worried about that. The doc comes and I pull my mask up. She goes, you don't have to worry about that. The main doctor where I go last time, I see a nurse practitioner in every 6 months, the main doctor. He came in. He says, I hope you don't mind me not wearing a mask. Not at all, says I. So, the doctor yesterday, she says, I am so through with this mask. Well, that's part of that protest that Ammon's in out there. And it's a fight. So there's just not one fight in this world, but it all just ties together, brings us all together. Well, yeah, actually, that hat was what some people have their heads stuck up. Let me figure that part out. Yeah, pump it up. Fight, flight, or fright. Fight, flight, or fight, they say. Fight or flight. Well, there's also that freeze where you don't move. There's a lot more to that. Freeze, well, They're simple facts, and I'm just shuffling them around a bit. And I'm having a good time at it, anyways, and shaking it balls. As well, me, yeah, I'm as country as a blue tick hound. You can kiss my country tail. I'll tell you again, in case you lost. This is for y'all there at the media. Your pen. It's the media doing it to you. By the pen, that sword, right? Maybe they just want to be in charge of how the story ends. I say that a lot. The last MF-er couldn't feel better beneath the mountain moonlight. There's some Dixieland and light. I was listening to some music the other night, and Turtle Dove and Rolling Stone, and hey, Jesus wouldn't mind. Been there. Join my club. Can you resist the urge? Too much fun. Well, let's see here. I think some people might call it a problem. I don't know. I call it a solution. None of this is problematic until there was a problem, right? And I understand if you don't want to remain, if you want to remain silent, but I'm not going to. Yeah. Fix what ain't broke. I ain't no reason to, but the character of a person is revealed, and be sorry for absolutely nothing. True grit is rough, but for all that it stands for, yeah, really, it comes from the heart. What kind of heart do you got? You got to start with the hard target, that man in the mirror. Yeah, put it on me. I can't apologize. I'm going to try to stay consistent. The hurt, the hunger, that's what comes first. I think again of that bird on a buffalo. I cook my bird on a buffalo turd. A dirt bag. Nah, where is this going to go here? What is a dirt bag? They end up broken. They wrap your words. Well, how do you feel? It's hardening a soft cell in so many ways. Yeah, sometimes you got to take an ass whooping for the point of it, right? And do you know how it hurts? I'm coming up out here on an hour. I didn't think I'd run this long with little or nothing that I had. And I did, there's two things, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to hit my mute button because I want these to be in here included into this archive. And Grimner, I meant to start out with some questions, never got to them. So we're not going to be posting crap to YouTube anymore, right? I mean, YouTube to turn our stuff into crap or kick us off. What archives we have there, we'd like to keep. So it'll take you a minute to catch us here. Then I'm going to come over and join into the chat room here. I'm going to end with Leonard Peltier, and I'm going to start with the Bundy Ranch when that assault happened. Let's see if I can find it here. So I think what I got, maybe 30 minutes here, and then I'll probably take some notes and come through and do a wrap up. I've been doing just an hour, but I went way over 2 hours last time. Here it is. Let me know. 8 minutes. I'll be back.
Fox News obtaining new video of the mess left behind after the standoff between federal agents and protesters at the Bundy Cattle Ranch in Nevada. William Lajeunesse is just back from the ranch. William?
Well, the root of the dispute, of course, is the desert tortoise. A federal court gave the BLM authority to seize and impound Bundy's cattle to protect the tortoise. But the order did not say the agency could, as this video shows, destroy his water tanks, water lines, and fences. Bundy blames the BLM for allegedly killing two prize bulls.
If you notice, I'm inside this pen where that bull was shot. And if you look along the inside of this pen, there's nothing where this pen has been bent. If you look on the ground, the post is still in the same spot. It hasn't even moved. It's not like the bull was smashing this pen and trying to attack the people or anything. The pen is sitting here, hasn't moved, no damage whatsoever. Where was the danger in that bull?
BLM wranglers allegedly shot the bulls because they were dangerous and could gore their horses. Bundy's friends say that the white bull was shot 5 times.
Nowhere in the court order that I saw does it say that they can destroy infrastructure, destroy corrals, tanks, desert environment, shoot cattle.
Now, the BLM said this afternoon these are federal lands and they don't need permission to destroy illegal fences, water lines, etc., to restore the land to its natural state. But remember, Bundy doesn't even recognize federal authority. And the government says he owes some $640 million in damages, and if he failed to pay, they would sell his cattle. Only we discovered a big problem. No one in Nevada would touch Bundy's cattle for fear of being blacklisted.
The sale yards are very nervous about taking these, what has in the past been basically stolen cattle from the federal government.
Documents show BLM paid a Utah wrangler $966,000, almost $1 million, to collect Bundy's cattle, and reportedly $300,000 for a Utah auctioneer to sell him. What they didn't plan for is a letter from the governor of Utah saying that Bundy's cattle could not be shipped or sold in Utah. So, Megan, on Saturday, the BLM is stuck with cattle that it could not sell, despite already spending millions of dollars in an operation that didn't work. This is not over. The BLM says it will try to resolve the dispute administratively and judicially, though Bundy does not recognize their rights and remains in violation, as you know, of multiple court orders. Back to you.
William, thank you. Well, new reaction tonight to the Bundy Ranch showdown, as critics suggest the federal response in Nevada was a case of overkill. And they say this is part of a larger pattern.
They can throw an army of men around there, literally, with sniper rifles. On guys just like you are, on people just like you are. Someday, they're going to throw that army of men around you.
Today is the greatest day in my lifetime. I've lived 65 years. Government just keep taking more and more, more federal government. Today, that's for the free men of America, right there. Soldiers that died and fought for it.
This right here is the best thing I've seen, the people taking their country back.
Judge Andrew Napolitano is Fox News' senior judicial analyst and with me now, taking the country back. And we've heard so much about how the Bundys did not have the law on their side. They were trying to stand up for a principle. But more and more in the days after this, Judge, people are talking about how it got that far. And if you look deep into this ranching dispute, what the ranchers will tell you is this was the straw that broke the camel's back, that they feel this has been a culture of intimidation. And in fact, there was a piece in the Washington Times just today that used that term, culture of intimidation, seen in the standoff. My question to you is that valid?
Well, the criticism is valid. It is a culture of intimidation. It's the federal government using grossly excessive force in order to resolve a dispute that you and I as lawyers know and people watching us now should understand can be resolved by filing some pieces of paper in a courthouse. Instead of filing some pieces of paper in a courthouse called a lien, the government says that it owes him money and a court order validated that, you file the lien on the property. And when he passes away, the government gets to collect. When he sells the property, the government gets to collect. One of those events must eventually happen, and the government can certainly exist until the money passes to it. Mm-hmm. Instead, they are showing up with an army, pointing M16s not only at Mr. Bundy and his family members, but at his friends, at people there to protest, to exercise the First Amendment rights, at Fox News, and at other news entities there trying to take pictures of them. That's what made this so hair-trigger-like, is the gross, unacceptable, unlawful accumulation of firepower there in order to enforce a judicial decree.
It's not the first time we've seen this. I mean, Fox News covered the raid on the Gibson Guitar facility in Tennessee, where we had agents armed with semi-automatic weapons, bulletproof vests, storming in over a piece of illegal wood that Gibson was using in its guitars. They were criticized for their behavior on a family-owned mining operation in Alaska for heavily armed federal agents raiding that. We've seen some heavy-handed tactics, you know, in fact, in terms of these raids, and then we've seen it, you know, at a more broad level in terms of the IRS, the DOJ going after reporters, the NSA spying on us. I mean, it's big government run amok in the eyes of many.
It is the federal government thinking it is immune from the laws of the land, the laws of civility that govern the rest of us, even basic constitutional principles, there's a vast disconnect, not only between the federal government and people like Mr. Bundy. Remember, the government is the servant, not the master. That's in the Constitution on the Declaration of Independence. That's not a political statement. That's a value judgment in the American system. But the federal government believes, look, it is boasting about the fact that it has destroyed his property. Mm-hmm. The government is subject to the laws like everyone else. They destroy his property, they have to pay for it. But yet they think they can be a law unto themselves. That's why this particular case is now ground zero, Megan, for the average American who expects the government to be the servant and the federal government that thinks it can push the average American around.
But let me step back a notch, because he did not have the law on his side, Cliven Bundy.
That's right.
He had lost twice in a court of law, and what binds us together if not the rule of law? So where did the feds go wrong having the law on their side?
That's a great question. The feds blew this. They had a court order from the federal judge who issued a decree against Bundy. The Circuit Court of Appeals upheld that order. If the federal government had done this right, none of this would have happened. But they used such excessive force, such unlawful behavior, so much destruction of his property, that now the tide has turned against them. Public opinion is clearly against them. They had to back down because their behavior was indefensible at the scene. They were saying, you can't even protest unless you go 3 miles away from here and stand inside a piece of tape.
Right.
So when the government loses control of the situation because of its own heavy-handedness, it's going to cause whatever court will look at this again, and you know it's going to go back to court to look at it very differently, and the government now has the losing hand.
Do they have the losing hand? That was from LibertyPen.com originally. It's here at Real Liberty Media on our YouTube channel. Did a shoot to kill and cover up policy set the stage for the Bundy Ranch standoff? Well, they found mass graves of slaughtered cattle unearthed in the Toco Wash after the bungled raid on the Bundy Ranch was abandoned by the Bureau of Land Management and the National Park Service. The Bureau of Land Management said that illegal structures, water tanks, and corrals on Bundy's ranch had to be removed to restore the land to its natural state. Again, why do you want to continue disorder? Proper hand of man is beneficial. It was reported that the court order justifying the BLM operation appears to give the agency the authority to only seize and impound the cattle. So again, they continue to tear down structure out there, and Ryan Bundy is replacing it. I wonder what's going to come about that yet. Bundy blames the BLM wranglers who allegedly killed the two prize bulls. Griff Jenkins reported on the record that an unknown number of cows were buried in the mass grave. I believe Ammon or Ryan has reported that number to have been, I don't remember, but several. Well, thanks, Chloe. Excuses are easier, it seems, and that in response to what I was talking about there earlier with Angry Indian. But people are wanting to take the country back, and should there be a separation, this red line, the red, white, and you, are we in it together? As long as we keep finding this separation, I think we're in a losing battle. But how did it get this far anyways? We're all on a reservation now. There is no law on your side, and it is pushing you around. The Bundy Branch, the prosecutors face more allegations and cover-up of BLM agent Dan Love and his misconduct. According to a letter penned by Utah Congressman Jason Chavez to the Office of the Inspector General, there were more questions raised by their investigation of Special Agent in Charge Love that answered than were answered. Chavez, the letter indicates that Love not only threatened people in his office while demanding they lie during the investigation, but he also had an employee shred and destroy untold amounts of evidence in the forms of documents, hard drives containing internal emails the day before a congressional inquiry was beginning to scrutinize the office of Dan Love. From May 19th, 2017, by Pete Santilli's show, I don't care for that guy at all. By the way, Deb Jordan, Las Vegas, Nevada. You Google Dan Love. This is from the Pete Santilli show. Bundy Ranch prosecutors face more allegations and cover-up. So for showing a citing source, I think Pete had indicated that he was going to sue people or something if they used some of his stuff or something. Anyways, here's some comments here in this video. Public servants always turn on their masters, especially police. Dale the hard luck cowboy, he said, very good. Thank you, sir. Red Tonto, there. The red, white, and blue in contrast, didn't it? They would have gotten away with these unconstitutional laws, too, if it weren't for that heavy hand. Cher Bullard says, what part of it's not federal land do you not get? What is the reply? Alaska Boomer. Oh, that's probably some kind of spam. So open that. Oh, anyhow, when I left off looking for that piece from Betsy Games Quammen, it was just like one click down in the scroll. And this is why I give her kudos here in response. Now, she's obviously biased, but that's okay. I think we all are. Hit piece, question mark. She said she was so careful. This is about Ammon Bundy's understanding. And I do want to bring this in. This is somebody, Liberty Nakamine, said that they could smell the bias in this article. It's not journalism for sure. It's called a hit piece. She said, hit piece? What? What in the world? That thing was going off like a mad hatter. Let me just see what that was all about. All right, so this is a historynewsnetwork.org article. So historynewsnetwork.org/article/179726. You know, going back, I wish I would always have in on Facebook and the memories, all that stuff's gone. You know, you just do a share and then that's gone. So thinking back to UCY.TV and a lot of the broadcasts then, I was doing and went back and looked at some of the event pages that I'd created for that, especially talking about geoengineering and back to climate change and Earth Day. I think I still want to have to touch on that before I finish up today and go back to that and talk just a little bit more about that. So this is from Betsy Games, Ammon Bundy's Ongoing Religious War. And again, kudos to her for kind of policing herself. And I want to compare her to Maxine Bernstein from the Oregonian and her coverage of the Bundy Ranch trials out there. She really changed her form of writing and became more responsible. And I would say probably one of the most informative people in journalism that I can cite. I'm distracting myself here as I'm looking over here for these notifications. I think it keeps repeating. Something's funky about that. I ain't sure. All right, but anyways, Betsy Gaines Quammen, Ph.D., is the author of American Zion, Clive and Bundy, God and Public Lands in the West. So she's going back to Ammon Bundy and his his arrest for failure to appear. Ammon Bundy's arrest for failure to appear was triggered by his refusal to wear a mask into the courthouse. And that's a still taken out of his YouTube video there in this article. Okay, let me read what she has to say. And from the book, I've started. I'm not finished it. I got too much stuff to do. Am I doing? Ammon Bundy, right-wing malcontent behind the 2016 armed takeover of Oregon's Malheur Wildlife Refuge and now a Western anti-mask movement, believes he's doing God's work. Coming from a long line of religiously inspired men who have been called to defend the U.S. Constitution, Bundy has varied in his focus from rebelling against public land ranching regulations to protesting COVID-19 safety protocols. But in his view, these are all forms of government tyranny and affronts to constitutional rights. and was arrested for the fourth time on March the 15th, 2021. But he was taken into custody for failure to appear, which he was trying to get into his court hearing. They wouldn't let him in without a mask on past trespassing charges because he refused to wear a mask into the courtroom, thereby missing his trial. He was apprehended outside amid a throng of other protesters. Bundy's crusade has been a long time in the making, but in the last year he has successfully established a coalition of supporters that is broad, diverse, and a serious threat to federal law. His group is called the People's Right Network. Like the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, it includes members who see the current government as a threat to perceived rights and are committed to defending their ideas of personal liberty by force if necessary. So, what has taken Ammon Bundy, who first came to prominence during the 2014 armed standoff in Nevada over his father's unpaid grazing fees and trespassing cattle, into a life of anti-government militant? The answer is a libertarian worldview and his take on Mormonism. Bundy's ideology parallels the thinking of certain leaders in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who've had a history of government cynicism. He also shares with them a traditional theo-constitutionalism, venerating the Constitution as a sacred document. The paradox here is that Bundy believes he is upholding the Constitution by fulfilling his religious duties in his acts of lawlessness. His impetus has roots in the early church, as the founder and first prophet of Mormonism, Joseph Smith, was murdered. Brigham Young assumed the reins of the church and brought the Latter-day Saints into the Great Basin. By that point, Young and his brethren were disgusted with the U.S. government after the years of mistreatment and bigotry they had faced. But the Mormon people had great faith in the Constitution. While still an apostle of Smith, Young said, "I find no fault with the Constitution or laws of our country. They are good enough. It is the abuse of those laws which I despise and which God, good men, and angels abhor." He later avowed, corrupt men cannot walk these streets with impunity, as if that is an alienism to the government. Amen to it. The Constitution of the United States we sustain all the day long, and it will sustain and shield us. While the men who say we are aliens and cry out Mormon disturbance will go to hell, but to proceed, the principal evil is in the rulers, or those who profess to be rulers, and the dispensers of the law. I find a little fault in what he's had to say there. Young was not just the leader of the church like Smith, he was a prophet. Although he was not as prolific in his revelations as other Mormon prophet presidents, these statements are memorialized in the Journal of Discourses and the History of the Church. Text not part of official church doctrine, but significant, especially to those with radical leanings. Over the years, many church prophets echoed Young's sentiments, from Wilford Woodruff to Ezra Taft Benson, reinforcing the idea that the Constitution is good, but not those who govern under it. Benson took that idea further, declaring that Mormon people had a religious obligation to protect the Constitution, even if this meant violence. In 1979, he declared, "I say to you with all the fervor of my soul that God intended men to be free." I say that, I agree 100%, and in doing so, and I'll say it again, I say God is an anarchist. That's right. And you probably don't understand that. And I don't know that I'll take the time to explain it further at this point. Religion against tyranny is a righteous cause. It is an enormous evil for any man to be enslaved to any system contrary to his own will. Well, that sounds like an anarchist to me. For that reason, men 200 years ago pledged their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor. No nation which has kept the commandments of God has ever perished. Well, I don't know about that. But I say to you that once freedom is lost, only blood, human blood, will win it back. So this is where things get treacherous. If the Constitution is sacred, but those overseeing it are evil, who determines and upholds the laws? Hold on, Graham. The land. Bundy has come to think this is his duty, a chilling certainty that it is likely to escalate during this current administration, as vaccines are more widely administered and mask mandates therefore become less of a concern. Bundy's focus will return to his original cause. The new Secretary of the Interior, Dad Hyland, H-A-A-L-A-N-D, is now charged with, you know, I find names funny, how they tie in, distracted, hold on. It is charged with overseeing public lands, including the place where Ammon Bundy's father, Cliven, continues to illegally graze his cows. Now, I've talked about that a lot, and I'm not going to go back into it this time. It'll have to be covered further in a future episode. So, the Patriot Bundy and his most infamous son share the conviction that the federal government has no constitutional right or power to own land. Hence, the land belongs to those white people who have occupied and used it, and the requirement of grazing fees paid to the Bureau of Land Management is unconstitutional. Now, Cliven said that he was more than willing to pay the county, Clark County in Nevada. Now, although Cliven has repeatedly lost his appeals in federal court and currently owes over $1 million in fines and fees, which that's disputed, the old rancher's cow still roam the land, the same BLM land. Is it BLM land or is it American land? Years after the Nevada armed standoff. To Ammon, mask mandates and grazing regulations are the same thing and being affronts to the constitutional rights. Law and common good be damned. He sees both as tyranny. He is determined to protect the Constitution even by unconstitutional means. Where the next action is taken, Nevada, Oregon, or somewhere else, on the 600 million acres of American public lands remains to be seen. In 2018, Bundy talked before an audience in South Jordan, Utah, during an event advertised as a power-packed 4 hours with an LDS Latter-day Saints perspective, but practical info for all true friends of liberty. He told them about his father's dream in which people approached a large building. Inside the building sat a golden calf, a biblical reference to a false idol that Cliven understand to symbolize the American court of law. Ammon explained that the dream meant people are putting their faith in judges who do not have their best interest at heart. You can't worship the golden calf. You have to have faith in God, he told the audience. When you know for certain that those are your rights, you do not allow them to be questioned. And I know that's a strong thing I'm saying, but when you do that, then your friends need to come and protect you also. And it's a duty of ours to do that. 4 months later, People's Right Org was registered, a year and 2 months before the pandemic brought America to a screeching halt. COVID-19 gave him a cause that fit a long ongoing narrative. The pandemic swelled the ranks of people's rights because of conspiracy theory and righteous anger. But it wasn't invented in response to it. Ammon Bundy had been looking for a next battle since the takeover of Malheur, when he led a group of heavily armed militia to occupy a government building in Harney County, Oregon. During that takeover, one man, Lavoy Finicum, was shot and killed by police. Ammon now has his own militia. That's not true. The People's Rights Network, and that's not an honest statement. An army of over 50,000 members in 50 states, according to the organization's website. He recently finished a recruitment tour in Utah, talking God, liberty, and the need for vigilante action. Antidotes to golden calves. His campaign is part of a long-drawn arc. We shouldn't expect his rebellion to end with a die-down of COVID-19. Bundy's attention will return to public land battles where the first insurgencies began. It wasn't COVID-19 that spurred the formation of the People's Rights Network and inspired Bundy's mission. It was a deep-rooted sense of righteousness, Cliven's dream and a version of Mormon ideology. 19 responses to that. What do you think? Well, let me come back over here. Thanks, Betsy. Like I said, I think that you you have some redeeming qualities there in your reporting. The book, where is it at? She wrote that book, she says, if you're interested in more. It's called American Zion, and I did find it. It's on audiobook, and I bought it, and I'm going to open it in just a second. She says, that must have been interesting. When I says, I had a chance to meet and talk to a lot of the media there while reporting, in my own small way as well. I have scrutinized much on how the news is delivered and find everything has its bias. You have presented facts in a very with very little of your own opinion in that narrative. I think she did good in that article. Of course, you know, there's still work to be done. And who am I to give scrutiny and criticize, right? That's the audiobooks now, American Zion. Let's see, audiobooksnow.com/audiobook/American -Zion/445-1996. And there's let's see, I thought there was a review here. No, Betsy gave a review of the one book there. What's her name? Keelan. Shoot. Bad with names. What's her name? Let me get to it again. Oh, I guess I'll have to. I could get to him here. Yes, yes, yes. Stinky. Too tired in him. I can find a name there real quick, just so I got it included. And then we're going to go listen to Leonard Peltier, a story about him. There's a longer one and a short one. Jacqueline Keeler, that's who I was for. Betsy did a review for her book there. I saw it. I don't have it in front of me. Okay, let's go see. I bet it's about being an anarchist, right, Grimner? Let's see what you said here. Back up on her. If God is an anarchist, why would he want people to defend the Constitution? Well, see, the Constitution is not a contract with me or you or any other person. It's a contract to the people that come to occupy office as representatives, and that is restricting their power over the people. That the people be free. So, yeah, God is an anarchist. I say that means there's no force. That means the Constitution cannot be used as force over a person. But in what they do, it's holding to account those people working there. And where they're not being anarchical in it. But how do we get this far? I need this contrast too of the red, white, and you with Leonard Peltier. And I think that let's see how long this is. It opens up, and then also. Yeah, it's 21 minutes. That's going to be good. And then we maybe start the other. There's several you can find from Leonard Peltier. And I wanted to do more really to cover this, but I'm going to leave it for you, the listener. But this is Leonard Peltier, Murderer or Martyr, 1987, The Fifth Estate. The Fifth Estate YouTube channel. Eric Mailing reports on the case of Leonard Peltier's Sioux, Ojibwe, and a member of the American Indian Movement, AIM. Lot to be said about that. Always infiltration in any kind of group or organization. There's always somebody there. informants and infiltrators and provocateurs. Always remember that. So he's serving a life sentence for the murder of two FBI agents in a 1975 skirmish at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Malling examines the FBI's conduct with respect to the American Indian movement, AIM, in general, and Peltier in particular, such as their use of false affidavits to extract him from Alberta up in Canada, and their suppression of evidence at his trial. That always happens in these trials. And there's some really good points made in this video here that we'll hear the audio from in just a moment. Also examined is the extensive media coverage the case has been receiving from the Soviet media. Malling interviews Peltier, who claims he was shooting in self-defense and doesn't believe the bullets even hit the man who died. Peltier remains incarcerated at a United States penitentiary at that time of print here in Florida. I dropped off over there. I'm assuming I'm still broadcasting. If not, it'll pick right back up. Let me go look. Yeah, here I'm back. Both of me back. Okay, good. So here, for listen, the story of Leonard Peltier. 21 minutes, 21 seconds. I'll be back.
Leonard Peltier is a North American Indian extradited from Canada, largely on the basis of fabricated evidence. He was tried in the United States and convicted of the killing of two FBI agents in a shootout on a South Dakota reservation 12 years ago. To the American judicial system, Peltier is just a murderer. But big questions remain about FBI tactics during the trial. As a result, a campaign to win Peltier's freedom has involved church and government leaders in many parts of the world. And in the Soviet Union, Leonard Peltier is front page news, portrayed as an innocent victim of a ruthless political system in the United States.
To the spirit who dwells in our hearts.
A weekly candlelight service at St. John the Divine Cathedral in New York City. With all the ritual of a high Episcopalian service, the saints' blessings are invoked for what very Reverend James Morton calls modern-day martyrs.
So that the experience of being in prison is very much a part of the experience of God's people. And so when we think of Leonard in prison, and think of Nelson Mandela today, two men who stand before us as bearing witness, but bearing witness in chains.
Nelson Mandela, jailed in South Africa. Leonard Peltier, doing life in Kansas. It's become a crusade. Free Leonard Peltier. And outside, carved in the stone of a church so large it's second only to St. Peter's in Rome, carved in the very stone, is the face of Leonard Peltier. It's a face which on the other side of the world, in the Soviet Union, is as familiar as Ronald Reagan. It's all over the daily papers. And on television, the Soviets follow Peltier the way Americans keep track of dissidents like Sakharov or Sharansky. A political prisoner in the heart of America. That's the Soviet message.
It's not a propaganda.
Hello. Anything? Try to connect now. Doggone. Okay, so I had some problems here with this to broadcast, and I'm going to go ahead and just embed this in the radio log blog for Leonard Peltier, murderer or martyr, and you can listen to that from yourself, for yourself, and I'm going to wrap this up and go ahead and end broadcast, and probably see you next Friday if I don't continue the interrupted, that is. All right, thanks for listening. RealLibertyMedia.com, folks. Come on over and check out our schedule. Some good shows playing over here. All right, thanks again.